Welcome to the special feast survey edition of the Sterncast, the Barony of Sternfeld podcast. I'm your host, Antonio Bellini. I have with me today Mistress Wolfwin Adebel, cooking laurel and all-around food person. Mistress Wolfwin is also author of The Complete Anachronist number 152, How to Prepare a Successful Feast. Most recently, Wolfwood has worked with the local cooks group in Sternfeld to develop and complete an SEA feast survey. Wolfwood, can you tell me more about how this project came about and how it was organized?
Sure. Sternfeld cooks want to make feasts better, and we were trying to decide where we should start. We thought it would be a good idea to do a survey to find out what people do and don't like about feasts the way they are now before we started trying to change things.
Okay, so your goal basically was to figure out where we needed to focus our efforts.
Yes.
Okay. How were the questions drafted and decided upon?
We tried to figure out, in general, topics that we were interested in. How do people feel about feasts from a financial perspective? For instance, how do they feel about accommodations for allergies or children or things of that nature? As we figured out questions we wanted to ask, we made sure to tie each of the questions back to one of the bigger categories so that we would make sure that we actually covered all of them and that we weren't going totally off the rails with questions that didn't tie back to something we actually wanted to know about.
Okay. How were responses to the survey gathered?
We put the survey out on the web, and people were good enough to post the link across the known world. People went ahead into the survey and just answered the questions and then submitted it. And then, as you know, you gathered all of the responses into a spreadsheet so that we could start analyzing the information.
Okay. In the planning process, were there any specific questions that you felt generated a lot of discussion from the cooks group before even ending up in their final form? Were there a lot of things that really generated quite a bit of discussion?
Everything generated some discussion because, other than cooking, I think all of our favorite thing to do is talk. I don't think there was really any great debate on whether or not to include certain questions. It was mostly how do we want to word it, and are there any follow-up questions that could help clarify?
Okay. So how long was the feast survey made available online for people to fill out and answer?
Our original intent had been to leave it up for a month. It ended up being slightly over a month. It ran from March 1st, 2014 through April 6th, 2014.
Okay. And how many responses did you receive overall?
Overall, we had 1,529 people respond, which is far more than I had hoped for. Based on the SEA's membership rolls of around 40,000 internationally, we figured that there are probably at least 60,000 people who participate altogether, some paid, some who are not paid. So the 1,529 response got us well over 2% of what we calculate the active participants in the society to be.
Excellent, excellent. Speaking of the fact that it was all distributed throughout the known world, where in particular did you find that responses were received from?
We got most of our responses from the Midrealm, Atlantia, and the East. All of the kingdoms were well represented. I think if we did this again, I would definitely either go myself onto all of the kingdom lists or recruit people to go onto all of the kingdom lists to publicize it more specifically in each kingdom. It went out kind of organically. People sent it to their friends or put it on lists they were on. So there were definitely some unevenness in how it got publicized.
Yeah, looking at the numbers here, it looks like that between Middle Kingdom, Atlantia, and the East Kingdom, that actually accounts for more than half the responses right there. Mm-hmm. So with that in mind, do you feel like that there is I guess the results are kind of biased towards how those three kingdoms do things?
Definitely. There's absolutely a strong east of the Mississippi United States response.
Okay. And kind of as a tie-in to that, were there any specific regional variations of interest that you found out over the course of getting your results back?
I was really surprised to find out how many different ways there are to approach food generally at events. Some kingdoms, from the way people answered, it's obvious that they don't offer lunch, ever. Some kingdoms almost always or always include lunch in the price of the site fee. A lot of the kingdoms are more apt to use off-board seating at feasts, so guests can come and sit at a table in the feast hall and enjoy the entertainment and the atmosphere, but they bring their own food. Things like that were really interesting to see.
Okay. So the results of the survey have been made available online at www.sternfeld.org/feast.php so that cooks and event stewards throughout the known world can review them and draw their own conclusions. Not everyone may be interested in reading the entire document in detail, so what are some specific findings that you think are valuable and that you'd particularly like to share with everyone?
There is, well, really a lot of things. One of the most fascinating things I saw was that although everybody is concerned about paying a reasonable price for events as a whole, including the feast, the price wasn't the most important consideration when people were deciding whether or not to go to a feast. Most important, the dishes on the menu. People wanted to make sure they'd like the food. Totally understandable. I was actually surprised to see the second most common factor that people considered was travel time to the event. Over and over again, we saw as a theme throughout several of the answers that people would like to know that if they're day tripping an event, they can go, enjoy the feast, and get home at whatever they consider to be a reasonable hour.
In reviewing the results myself, I saw several mentions of wanting the menu or the ingredients published.
That was the single most popular response we got to both what made a good feast good and what made a bad feast bad. As everybody's run into who's ever cooked for really anybody, not just in the SCA, a lot of people have allergies. A good number of people are vegetarian, a lot of people are going gluten-free, but for the most part, people are perfectly willing to take matters into their own hands, decide whether or not to eat the feast, decide which dishes they can or cannot eat, but to do that, we have to be responsible and tell them what we're serving. Here's the dishes we're going to serve, here are the ingredients. If it's store-bought, we tell you if it's store-bought so you know whether your particular health situation or dietary needs will allow you to eat it.
So instead of necessarily saying, you know, I want feasts to be vegetarian and cater to me, or I want these allergens to not be included, the general consensus was more along the lines of, I want to have information to be able to make an educated decision.
Absolutely. There were a number of people also who specifically mentioned they have seen feast kitchens that weren't as well organized as they would like in terms of preventing cross-contamination of allergens, or for instance, if you're prepping meat, you want to make sure to be very cautious in how you clean up. And so folks naturally were very concerned about that too.
Okay. The topic of period versus non-period food was covered a fair amount as well in there. Mm-hmm. Do you have any comments on that?
I was very encouraged at people's responses to what kinds of foods they like. Do they like period food? Far more people would prefer period food than those who specifically said, I do not want you serving period food. A good number of people were in the middle. I like period food sufficiently well. If you serve it, great. If you don't serve it, great. But there were a lot of folks who specifically mentioned, we're trying to recreate an experience here. And while people like spaghetti and meatballs and steak and all kinds of other things, it's not what they expect to see when they go to a feast at a society event.
That makes sense. You had mentioned timing as regarding to people getting to events, when the timing of the feast was, how long it would take to get home. Also, a question that was asked was how long should feasts last, and what were the results on that question?
By far the largest group of people would like a feast to last around an hour to as much as an hour and a half. And that makes perfect sense. A, you just get tired, and you want to get up and walk around and do other things. B, mostly with the exception of really big holiday dinners, most of us just aren't used to sitting and eating for that long. And C, of course, there are folks with children, and children's attention spans don't often run to 90 minutes of sitting in a chair.
Sure, sure. So what were some of the key impacts on the decision whether to attend feast or not? You'd mentioned travel time, you'd mentioned the dishes.
Some of the key things people considered, as we already talked about, dishes and travel time, the cost was actually the third most common thing people considered. The reputation of the feast chef and the host group both came in for a lot of mentions. People consider their own health situation, their allergies and dietary needs. And one of the things that surprised me, because in the Midrealm, we almost always allow people to pre-register for feast. And apparently there are a number of kingdoms out there where it's either less common or not even allowed. And a large number of people mentioned that they would really love it to have the opportunity to pre-reg. So again, they can plan ahead. They know whether they're getting a feast ticket before they hit the event site.
Sure. I know a lot of kingdoms have started using ASAPs to do pre-registration for events. Not always does the feast information make it out there, and even if it does, not always are the ingredients in the menu necessarily published far enough ahead of time to where people can go and do that registration ahead of time. So that might be an area where people can really look to improve.
That's absolutely an area where we want to improve in Sternfeld. We've published that information before for feasts, but it's been spotty. Sometimes we do, sometimes we don't. Sometimes we publish the menu, but not the ingredients. Sometimes people will put out something general, such as chicken with sauces, which is great, except that you don't know what's in the sauce, and if they serve the sauce on the chicken, suddenly you've got mystery chicken.
Okay. Another comment that I saw mentioned was that a good number of people actually like getting copies of the recipes used, and that's something I've seen occasionally, but not a ton. Do you see anything as far as other kingdoms where it's more common, or was there a fair amount of mention of that being something people wanted?
Not a huge amount. There were people who were definitely interested. I think that with the internet becoming more and more common as a means of communication, people are more used to just going and getting the feast recipes online if they're made available afterwards. I do know people who have collected every feast book from every feast that offered it that they've ever been to.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, in my experience, people will remember, oh, I had that pie at that event and I really loved it. I should go see if I can get that one recipe.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm going to jump in here and just share. There were several interesting ideas that were identified in the results and that have come out of some of the discussions since the results were reviewed. These are just possibilities and things that have been done at times, could be done, just small things that will make the experience a little bit better. Things like cooking the entire feast ahead of time for a small group of people prior to setting the final menu to make sure that all the dishes work, that they can be prepared at the same time without it being massively inconvenient to the cooks and causing problems with utilization of the resources of the kitchen. Doing candlelight feasts where it's possible, that came up a few times. Providing zip-top baggies for leftovers to go home in the case where there are leftovers. Where possible, and a lot of that depends on the site, providing a rinse station for dishes, or at least providing trash or little grocery bags for dirty dishes to go home in. Several of these options just really don't require too much additional cost, but can help improve the feast in small ways and might be some things that people would want to consider.
Absolutely. Taking one of the last points first, giving people something to do with their dishes. It's absolutely crucial. If you're serving a feast where people are bringing their own feast gear or dishes, you need to do something. Optimally, yes, having a rinse station or even a wash and rinse setup is by far a great option. But even giving them, as you mentioned, baggies to put their feast gear in so that it doesn't get food all over the back of their car is also something that's very appreciated by feast guests. I appreciate it to the point where I actually put bags in my feast gear basket in case I don't get one given to me at the feast.
Okay.
Doing a candlelit feast, I have a great deal of sympathy for people wanting candles on feast tables. There are a couple of issues we do run into that. There are some feast sites that either will not allow candles at all or will only allow them with glass hurricane globes. But that's something that the feast chef or the event steward can easily find out in advance and publicize so people know whether they can bring their candelabra. Another thing that we run into is people's perception of what a historic feast hall would have looked like. For the most part, we're creating feasts that would have been served to nobles, people of high rank and their guests. And one of the ways that a host can show how high rank he is by lighting the heck out of the feast hall. So you can see all the fabulous dishes and silver and the servants and the tableware. So candlelight is good. Only candlelight is not actually a very accurate representation of what we're going for. In addition, I've been in feast halls that were so dark, I feared for the servers' lives. It's really easy to trip and make a mistake when your hands are full and it's dark. So I would encourage people who want to make a feast hall ambiance better to, yes, do everything you can to allow candles, but also do things like provide tablecloths, put banners up, throw a sheet over the Coke machine in the corner of the feast hall. All these things help.
Okay. There were several questions regarding adventurous foods and what their place in a feast might be. What were the findings from these questions?
I was really, really proud of people in general because the first thing we asked in that section was, do you consider yourself an adventurous eater? Most people responded in a way that I'd categorize as cautiously adventurous. But then when we got on to the open-ended question of what do you consider to be a weird food, the majority of people put nothing. They didn't leave it blank. They specifically wrote in, nothing is weird. There were a very large number of people who specifically called out things they had seen on the Bizarre Foods TV show by name. Hmm. So apparently people are very concerned about getting given duck embryos in the egg and other fascinating things. My advice would be if you saw Andrew Zimmern eat it on TV, you might want to reconsider serving it at a feast.
Okay. What types of entertainment did you find that people enjoy at feasts? What should we try to do more of versus less of?
The vast majority of people either indicated they enjoy entertainment at feast or are willing to have entertainment at feast, with two big caveats. The entertainment has to be reasonably quality, you know, halfway decent entertainment. The other is they're there to eat and talk with their friends. So most folks do not want entertainment that they actually have to put their conversations on hold and give all their attention to the performer. Things people mentioned that they saw that had worked really well were background music, provided either by a group or by individuals, musicians who strolled around to individual tables and asked, may I play a song for you? And then the table could say, oh yes, or oh, we're in the middle of our conversation, we'll see you later. A few people mentioned magicians going around to each table and doing tricks that you can't really do in front of a large audience, so that was very special for folks. There were a vast number of other things. People have seen dancing demonstrations at feasts. One person mentioned they'd seen a mock fencing demonstration done between courses as a way to keep people interested in what was going on.
Very cool, very cool.
Mm-hmm.
There were several questions on the pricing of the feast. Overall, what were people's preferences?
Overall, people's preferences seemed to run in the $10 to $15 range. Generally, people are more willing to pay more for a feast that, again, they can see the menu in advance and know that there's a lot more food or food of what they consider to be a higher quality. Mm-hmm. There were also a large number of people who spelled out that I will pay more for a really good feast. Makes sense, but I mean, there were people specifically from Locock, which thank you, everybody from Australia. Several of them mentioned that they would pay upwards of 25 Australian for a feast, which is about 30 US, and we never come close to that here. So apparently those folks like to party.
Mm. There were two fairly large sets of questions towards the end of the survey revolving around whether respondents had been to a great feast and what made it great, along with whether they'd been to a bad feast and what made it bad. What were some of the more interesting findings from that section? First, let's start with the bad. What makes a feast bad?
What makes a feast bad? Pretty much you could predict almost all of it. I split it into three general headings: things to do with the food, guest comfort and preferences, and timing. A third of the people said that the poor timing of the feast made it bad. Either the feast was terribly late, or for a multiple course feast, there was just way too long between the courses, so the feast lasted forever. Or even the feast started on time, the courses were appropriately paced, but the feast itself just lasted forever because it was planned to be a 3-hour feast. Guest comfort, a lot of people commented on the lack of ambiance in the feast hall as being a problem for them. They're paying to go to an event, we're trying to recreate an experience, and they'd like us to do more for that. About an equal number of people commented that if the food, ingredients, or preparation were not authentic, they didn't enjoy the feast as well. Smaller but significant numbers of people were disappointed at no entertainment or the entertainment provided being bad. A relatively small number of people said bad feasts were bad because they cost too much. And again, that was kind of nice to see, because if a person's disappointed in a feast, you don't want it to be strictly on a basis of it costs too much. The food obviously was by far where people had the most to say. About a third of the people who had a bad feast, over half of them, said it was just simply due to bad taste or doesn't look good. A large number of people were served overcooked or undercooked food. Food at the wrong temperature came out a surprising amount of times. Hot food, cold food, hot, everything room temperature. People did want more variety. There were a lot of instances of folks asking for more variety in how the food tasted or the types, or please don't put all of the same ingredient in every dish. Mm. Only a very few people were upset at seeing overly strange foods, things they had not expected. And a very small number of people were concerned about the feast not being cohesive. Either it looked like the feast itself was tossed together from a bunch of different time periods and countries, or if the event was strongly themed, people wanted the feast to have the same theme. Mm. So if you're having a 16th century Italian event, try to have a 16th century Italian feast, not 8th century English.
That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed like timing was a serious issue that was mentioned repeatedly. Of course, I know it could be challenging for feast cooks to plan and serve a feast at many events because there's other activities such as court right before the feast,
mm-hmm,
that can run long and cause the entire schedule to be delayed, which causes problems with travel plans, problems with food timings, and many other issues. Do you have any specific advice you can give to event and feast staff to try and mitigate these problems?
Yes, there are things that my friends and I have tried with good success, and I would recommend them to anybody. First and foremost, have a good relationship with the event steward and the other folks involved in running major areas of the event. You can check in with them or send someone to check in with them. I usually do it several times throughout the event. Hey, how are things going? Is there anything running over? Is there anything that got added to the schedule that I should know about? Sometimes you'll find that, oh, everything's running perfectly on schedule, but the king decided to do court during feast. Oh, okay, the earlier you find that out, the better. One thing that you can do, it's a little pricey, but it's a nice way to deal with things, is if you're serving a lot of things that must be kept hot, you can rent warming boxes. You can also make impromptu warming boxes that work really well by lining coolers with towels and layering pans of hot food in them. It'll actually keep food hot for hours that way. You can buy expensive things called Cambros that do the exact same thing, or you can just borrow coolers. One of the best things I can recommend is to make your first course, whether it's going to be on the table or served and when people sit down, make it something that's flexible in terms of timing. So don't make it something that has to come off the stove and immediately be served and immediately eaten to be good. There's a reason people even now do appetizers the way they do, where you can make them in advance. If they're served hot, great. A lot of them are served room temperature. If you're interested in putting something out on the tables for your guests, really nice options, get the bread out and whatever you're serving with the bread. Fruit, cheese, hard-boiled eggs, whatever you're able to put out that doesn't require immediate intervention.
Okay, well, let's move on to the Great Feast. What makes a feast great?
Again, we split it up into the three major categories: food, guest comfort and preferences, and timing. Not too surprising on the timing. The course of the feast in general, the timing was good, contributed to about a fifth of the people who said they'd had a really good feast. Guest comfort and preferences, kind of the same thing, the flip side of the bad feast. Good ambience in the hall. A fifth of the people said period food made a feast good for them. Good entertainment. Great company, which there's really not a lot a feast chef can do to ensure you're sitting with a congenial person at the table, but we can work with the hall steward, the entertainment coordinator, the event steward, to try to make sure that entertainment doesn't interfere with people's ability to have a good time with their friends.
And perhaps sometimes you'll see seating charts posted where individuals can sign up to sit with specific people.
Yes.
And when that doesn't happen, it tends to be a little bit more of a free-for-all where not everybody gets to sit with somebody they know necessarily.
Personally, I love seating charts. Lack of a seating chart not only causes the problem you're talking about, but it causes what looks unfortunately like a cattle stampede when you let people into the hall to set up. You also run into the situation where you'll have people wandering around in ones or twos looking for a table that can take them. And no guest should have to feel unwelcome like that. That's just not cool. I greatly encourage everybody to use seating charts, even if it's not a chart that looks like the hall. Just put out a list that says we have 8 tables of 8 people. Here's table 1 with 8 places for names.
Okay. Go ahead.
Sorry. The food obviously was a big part of what people liked about feasts. Tasty food, good variety of food. A big one for people was the correct amount of food. People don't want to be sent away hungry, but a corresponding number of people said, when I see big piles of leftovers, it upsets me because I've paid for a feast. There should not be a ton of leftovers. You should plan better than that. And they especially get aggravated if they see you throw it away. And that comes back to the, if you think you may have leftovers, or even if you don't, plan ahead. Bring some plastic baggies. It never hurts.
Sometime during the initial days of the survey, you'd mentioned that you discovered a feast survey had been completed before.
Yes.
What can you tell us about the differences between both the methodology and the results between the two surveys?
The prior feast survey was done by a lady, I hope I'm pronouncing her name correctly, Rain, and she put the results out on the web too, which was enormously helpful. The primary difference in methodology was that her survey had all open-ended text-based answers. She asked a question, she gave a text box, people typed in their answers. We had a lot of that, but we also gave a lot of scales, yes, no. So we were trying to get more numeric information. We then took the open text answers, and a number of people among them Antonio, our host, went through and split those out into broad categories. For instance, the weird foods. There were things that got responded over and over again. I don't like raw things. I don't like insects. I don't like game meat or seafood. When something came up enough in the open text responses, we made it its own column and just checked it off every time we saw it. Also, her survey had fewer respondents. I believe it was around 600. It was a good many years ago, and putting a survey out on the web was totally different than it is now. So I think her survey got great responses for the time that it was done and the way it would have been distributed.
And when was that completed?
I believe it was 94. I'm not sure.
So possibly 20 years ago.
Oh gosh, no, probably not that long ago. I didn't look up the date.
That's okay. There were several respondents who either took survey questions very personally or questioned your methodology outright. Do you have any response or anything you'd like to say to those individuals?
We certainly did. I was glad to see people were taking the survey as a serious thing. That was great. That being said, I am absolutely not a statistician in real life. If I were to do another fee survey, I would try to find somebody, and I know I have friends who do statistics as part of their jobs, I would try to find someone who could help me make it better. At the same time, there were people who took some things very, very personally. I truly did not set out to offend anybody, and I'm sorry if any of the things did offend people. For the most part, people seem to be in good humor about taking it. One person got to the very end and said, "I'm not answering this last question because your survey took longer than you said," but then he put a bunch of smiley faces. So people on the whole seem to be okay with it.
Okay. There were a few conflicts apparent in the data, and just to name a few of them, feast is too expensive, feast is too reasonably priced, or is reasonably priced. There's not enough fish on the menu. There's too much fish on the menu.
Mm-hmm.
We should cater to dietary preferences. We shouldn't ever cater to dietary preferences. Obviously, in many of these cases, there's not going to be an answer that makes everyone happy. Do you have any suggestions on how to approach these issues to make as many people as happy as possible?
The best thing I can say is if you're planning a feast, try to know your audience. If you can get a handle on, for instance, let's say you're doing a feast for a crown tournament. What are crown tournaments like in your kingdom? Does everybody go to the feast? Do a very few number go? Do people expect it to be fancy? Do they expect it to run late, later into the evening because of so much going on during the day? If you're promoting, say, a feast for a local event, find out what your people like to eat. Do your people like lots of meat? Do your people like having a lot of variety? Would they rather see a one-course feast, a multiple-course feast? Getting a handle on your guests can do a lot for you. One thing I've done in the past to try to get a handle on things is about pricing. I went through our Kingdom newsletter for the prior 5 years and looked at the feast cost for every feast at a local event or a regional event or a Kingdom event to try to get an idea of what kind of the average expectation is for feast costs, because, again, I didn't want to price people out of the market.
Mm-hmm. Okay. To leave things on as much a positive note as possible, what are some positive takeaways we can get out of the survey results?
This is where I'm really hoping to make great use of the survey results right away, because people were really awesome about giving suggestions on what can we do to make you more likely to attend a feast. This is actually, to me, this is it, the it of the survey. The biggest thing that people mentioned was publish the menu and ingredients in advance. And honestly, that's great because it takes a very small amount of effort. It takes no extra money if you're putting things out on an existing event website, and it helps a lot of people. A large number of people wanted to be served period food. I enjoy cooking period food, but I would give that a huge caveat. If you are not already comfortable serving food safely, on time, on budget, at the proper temperatures, in a good mix of ingredients and types of dishes, don't try to go for period food. That's at the top of the pyramid, and I want people to get there. I truly do. But you cannot sacrifice the other levels to get there. If it's period food and it tastes bad, people will not think this is a bad tasting feast. What they walk away with, because I've seen it happen again and again, is period food is icky. And we really don't want that. A lot of people wanted better variety of foods. Taste testing in advance was mentioned again and again, as you said earlier. Doing a test feast for a small number of people, especially if there are other cooks or people who are going to be in your kitchen, is a huge help. You may find that this dish that's delicious is just way too much work to be worth it, or that the things you plan to serve together don't go that well together. There's really only one way to find that out, and that's by doing a test feast. People would love it if we improved the atmosphere of the feast hall or provided a theme for the feast. Turns out it's part of the entertainment of the event. Who knew? There were a good number of people who would prefer a lower cost feast, but not a huge number. It was only 105 out of 1,500 odd respondents. So that was nice. We seemed to be hitting pricing reasonably well. And then we're back to improving preparation and organization. A lot of people specifically said, please train or mentor your feast chefs and staff. Don't just throw them out into the woods and let them do or die. Help them out. And I couldn't agree more.
There was also quite a few comments that mentioned gratitude for feast cooks for making an interesting, plentiful meal with wide variety and all for a reasonable cost. And that seemed to be a very positive takeaway that was present in quite a few of the open responses.
Yes, that was really great to see. There were a lot of folks who, some of them were cooks, but the majority of them were not, who just said, thank you so much for doing this. This looks really hard, and I appreciate it. And that was really great. So thank you to everybody who said thank you to a cook.
Mr. Schwolfen, I thank you for your time. Again, to those of you listening, if you have any specific interest in seeing the full results from the feast survey, documents are available online at www.sternfeld.org. That's sternfeld.org/feast.php. Thank you for listening. As always, the Sterncast welcomes your comments. I can be reached at webminister@sternfeld.org.